Okay, I guess we'll start it over here. So this session, how many of you have heard about dynamic access control? Just by show of hands. Okay. How many of you guys actually had a chance to take a look at some documentations around it on the public, like, you know, TechNet, etc. Okay, so not a lot. So basically, the session was, I was asked by Daryl to do a session on introduction on dynamic access control, because with the mindset that there's a lot of information involved, a lot of protocol document involved, so we want to give you a high-level session on what are all the features that's involved there. So the session's going to be really high-level, and then we're going to have some follow-up sessions on the more details on access, etc., later on in the afternoon. Okay? Okay, so we're just going to dive in over here. The agenda over here is today we're going to talk about a little bit about objectives, spend very few time on that, and grade three customer challenges that this particular solution is going to solve. And also, we're going to list, so the majority of time we're going to spend is on Windows 8 investment, what we did from the feature perspective. And then we're going to show some demos. So it will be demo sessions. And then we'll leave some time for questions. Okay, so the objective today, like I said before, just to give a really high-level view of what are the features that's involved in here. And the customer challenges that we're facing today, I just want to see a show of hands, how many of you guys are actually doing like an informational management type of application, dealing with files management. Okay. So then I see a lot, couple more hands over here. So I think you're familiar with the problem with managing informations today. They are specifically associated with, you know, storage growth. There's a lot of more data today, right? Because storage has grown, and then people think, hey, we can save all the data that we wanted. But come with that is the challenge of actually managing all these data. Because now you have all the data. How do you manage them? And then there's also the distribution problem, so which is, well, I save all my files on the local file servers. They don't share with each other. How do I have like a consistent taxonomy driving across all different file servers so I be able to systematically label them, etc. And then of course with the distribution and storage, it comes with the compliance, which is how do I prove like I'm actually compliant with amount of data that I have. And then now there's also increasing on like the regulations due to the economies, etc. So that's putting more stress on that. And then there's the data leakage, which is, hey, once the file is stored on the file server, okay, they're reasonably secure, we did all these applications to make it secure, but what happens if it goes off in the emails, etc.? How do you regulate that? Okay, so now, just after I state some of the customer challenges that we see, we're going to dive into the Windows 8 investment that we did over here. So there's some categorization over here. Don't worry about this sheet. There's no quiz, you don't have to remember them. So basically, the first three sections are kind of together. I'm going to present them together. They're about centrally control, having a central policy that allows access for the users to the files. So it will touch on the user claim, device claims, and then we'll talk about file classifications and how they all tie together into a central access policy. And then we're going to go into what happens if the file goes off, you know, someone emails someone the file, then it's a data protection from the encryption perspective. And we're going to talk about a little bit about investment on the informational worker side, where, you know, the challenge sometimes is, hey, if I don't have access, what do I do now? How do I request access? What we did in Windows 8 to improve that experience, as well as the receiving end, the help desk persona on, okay, this person doesn't have access, how do I figure out why he doesn't have access? And then finally, we're going to grade through the auditing investment that we did. Okay. So the first part of the session, as I mentioned just now, is involving three sections over here, the investment that we did in Windows 8, which is we now enable the claim inside of an AD. We're actually building that as a concept in AD. And it's, I think it's in the Kerberos tokens, we include claims. So now claims is in the Kerberos token. And we're gonna talk about, so we see how it fits into the formula of central access policy. So it's basically a centrally controlled policy that allows users dynamically accessing their files. And then we're gonna dive a little bit deeper into different methods of classifying your files. Okay, so this you're gonna see over again in the next 10, 20 minutes. So this is basically how a central access policy may look like. So it consists of multiple rules that consist of claims on the left-hand side that says, hey, user.department is equal to resource.department. What that means is user who's in the same department is able to access files in the same department. Now, that apply that policy within the whole, like across all the file servers, now I can be able to centrally enforce that policy so that the user follows certain rules over here. So basically, the essential part over here is that we introduced expressional-based access management inside the policy there. Okay. So we're going to take a look at the one of the building block, which is the claims. So the claims, so we integrate the claims inside a Kerberos token, which Machiko will dive it a little bit more deeper in the afternoon session. I think it was 1 o'clock and 2 o'clock. So the types of claims, so claims are stored in AD. And we essentially save that in the configuration partition inside of AD. And then that's cross forest, that's cross like entire forest wide configuration. And the types of the claims is depend on the method of logging on. So the user claims means, hey, it's basically a account that's logging on as. So that's when it's presented as a user claim. And a device claim is a different section in a token, which is what device you use to log on. Okay. But if you look at it a slightly different way, inside of AD, however, we actually group them in three different categories, different type of claim types. So that's the list of how they can be sourced from. So a claims can be sourced from, which is generated based off the user's attribute values. So for example, how do I, the user.department would now be populated based off their attribute value inside of AD of a user. So the user.department would be, hey, finance, if their AD attribute is actually finance. So that's what the AD attribute source means. And then it can also be sourced from certificate. So for example, smart card logon, basically using the OID inside a certificate, and then generating a claims based on that. And the third type, we're gonna talk about a little bit more on the next slide. It can be generated from the transform policy. And what a transform policy is, it's a good segue to the next slide, is basically, now we enable the claim inside of one forest. So how do we make it work so that the user from a trusted forest can access files on the trusting forest? This we introduced a concept of called cross-forest transformation, which is you can say, hey, using cross-forest transformation policy, I'm able to explicitly allow certain claims to come in from my trusted forest to access the files. So this requires the user to config a transformation policy, and also to make it a little bit easier, remember the third type of the claim we mentioned before, we basically allow you to put it in almost like a dummy claim type inside of your target forest, so you don't have to clean up all your attribute inside that target forest, and then populate the claim type based on these attributes. It basically just allow you to have a stub on the other trusting forest to get the claims when it transforms from across the forest boundary coming in, it will be retained that way. So it allows you to access the files. Okay, so that's kind of like a really high level on the claims. So now we're going to talk about how it actually plugged in here. I want to leave the resource property to later because we're going to talk about classifications, different ways of classifying it. So the equation over here is really, so the equation over here, actually I'm going to leave the policy to later until I explain all the building blocks over here. So resource property. How many of you are familiar with the file classification, which was actually a feature in 2000 ART? Okay, so not too familiar. That's okay, because I was kind of expecting that. So the definition for the classification is actually really simple. It's just tagging of the files. On the files, you can have multiple property that describes what the file does, and then you can associate a business property with it. So for example, high impact files, you can label them as high impact files. And then they can be, so now because the file gets tagged, now we can use these tags inside of expressional based central access policy. We can say user.department equal to resource.department because that resource.department actually exists now because we labeled them. And then based on the file classification tags, you can also do encryption. Because now you can say, oh, because these are high impact, therefore I'm going to encrypt them. So it allows you to gauge off that classification tag and do the appropriate encryption on that. And then also allow you to do retention policies. So here, just a slide of the classification infrastructure architect. And the process of when the tech gets discovered is kind of like, hey, I discovered there's someone modified the files or modified the tags or modified the files. And then I'll be able to extract, I'll be able to classify the data. Like someone come in and classify the data by touching the files. And then I'll be able to apply policies based on that because it triggers off the policy being kicked off. And then the two blocks over here, the purple ones in the middle, is extracting classification and storing them. So in Windows 2008 R2, we had them locally stored at the file server so that each tag is different. But now we enhance that, so now you can actually save that in AD, therefore they're globally accessible. So here is a slide about just, we're going to go through all these diagrams. We're going to go through each block after. We're going to talk about what does it mean by location-based, the menu classification, automatic classification, and application. So just want to graze that through. So this is talking about how the taxonomy of these classifications is being saved. It's saved in AD. Remember where claim types or claim definitions are being saved. They're in the configure petition inside of the AD, and it's a forest-wide concept. So same as a resource property, it's saved under a similar container where it's called a resource properties container inside of the config petition. And then you can save that taxonomy globally, and you can extend that. So basically, if you're writing an application, you want to do your own classification, you can save your objects, you can save your definition of the resource property inside here. And then this way, the advantage it buys us is it make it global. Basically, all the file server in that same forest can pull it down from AD and then basically be able to consume the consistent classification taxonomy. So think about it as metadata for these classifications. So how is information being tagged? So how is the information being classified? So first of all, information being classified and these tags are location-based. So what does it mean is if, say, inside of the folder, so you can classify your file all the way up at the container level, So I actually include and actually inherits all the files and folders underneath the inheritance. So by basic of being in that folder, you're now getting these tag information freely. So it's kind of inheritance. And when you move these files that are tagged to different folders, other folders, these tags will be retained. Unless if you write a classification rules to override it specifically. By default, they will be retained. The reason why that's the case is we don't want someone who don't have access to the files inside that folder be able to move it to somewhere that they can access it and override it. Okay, and then we'll see a demo of how to do that later. And then there's the automatic classification, which is actually already available in 2000 AR2. This is basically an engine that goes in and basically looking for a file being touched because the content has changed. For example, hey, content got changed because I include a confidential like as a word in there. So now all of a sudden, I'm able to continuously looking at files being modified and be able to tag them right away. And the continuous part, so the continuous part is new in Windows 8. Previously, you can only tag them based on time, basically saying every week we will go around and tag all these informations, but now you can actually continuously tagging them based on the information detected. So that's automatic classification. Usually, you want to do the main batches. And then there's the application. There's not a lot of change in that application compared to Windows 2000 AR2, except that we can actually now retrieving, obviously, the global resource property, which is a brand new concept in ADT, in Windows 8, yeah. Okay, now we're going back to this diagram. I think you're already sick of this diagram. But this is, so we explained about user claim, device claim, and then resource property, also known as the classification metadata. So how do they fit into the policy here? So the policy is actually consists of multiple central access rules. So we talk about the equation of user.department equal to resource.department. So that expression lives inside of central access rule. And then these are some of the major elements, not all of them, I didn't list all of them here, but these are some of the major elements that you should pay attention to inside of the central access rule. So the first element over here is target resource. It's basically when you apply a policy to a folder, you may want to exclusively say, the other data I don't care, but I only care about certain set of data inside this folder. This basically allow you to provide a scope for that. And that's expressional based as well. So you can say only the data that was labeled as finance, this particular rule applies to. So then you don't have to worry about all the other files that are not classified because you simply haven't got around to classify them yet. And then there's the major element of the current permission. And that's where we say who actually has access to what file. Again, it actually takes the current DACL-like expression. So it basically can use groups, etc., inside of it, just like what you do permission today. Or you can use expressional based permissions. And then inside you can use your claim as user dot something is equal to resource dot something, or user dot something is equal to a specific value. Etc. And then the proposed permission looks pretty much exactly like the current permission. The difference over here is proposed permission is a parameter that we put in that allows better staging modeling. So for example, it's really scary when you apply these rules across the whole forest, right, essentially. So it's really scary to say, oh, I'm going to change my policy now to get it right the first time. It's kind of like unheard of, right? So you want to do your testing before you actually apply it to everything, before you actually even publishing it. So the proposed permission is where you can say, oh, I put exactly the same permission I want to put in my future current permission in here. And what will happen is as the time go on, there will be logs being generated to capture the difference between the current permission and proposed permission. So now you can actually look at your log on the same environment that you're about to you know, deploy the permission and be able to say, oh, look, you know, Melissa really should not have access to this anymore based on the new rule. And she doesn't because there's laws that generated that says now she no longer have access to. Okay, so that's kind of like summarized what the central access rule is about. And then central access rule, multiple of them makes up central access policy. And a policy can be applied, so one folder can only have one policy applied to it. And that's kind of important. And the policy is being published through GP and be able to manually select it by the file server admin on their local file servers where the policy is available for them to select. So usually the workflow we're envisioning over here is, hey, the user gets, the file server admin gets an email that says, hey, select the central access policy to your folder that you're responsible for. They go in, there's a menu UI that allows you to select that. So now once you select that, it's enforced over there. And then here also I want to pause a second. So you're probably wondering about how is this associated with the current Dacoin file share, which already have permission on them. So it's, I want to say it's ended together. So for example, think about them as gates. So you need, as a user, I have to pass all these security gates in order to get to my resource. So the share is one gate at the higher level. And the DACO is the one layer, which is you know, another gate that we currently have. And this is yet another gate that you have to apply. So when someone's using it, it's very important to understand that relationship between the two. Because otherwise you would get unexpected, you know, permission, unexpected permission denied. Okay, so now we're gonna do some demos. In the demos that I'm gonna show, we're gonna see a user was able to access the file before and then couldn't access because the policy is applied, because we hacked the file, etc. And then we're gonna take a look at the automatic classification. Okay. So I have a couple machines over here for my demo over here. I have a file server, I have a DC, basically domain controller, and I have a client machine. So what am I gonna do is I'm gonna log on to my client machine and first try to access the financial document that I'd be able to access them. As I'm logging as M. Wenzer. Okay. Okay, and then now I'm going to do something on the file server. So I'm going to manually tag the file right now. And keep in mind, I've actually already got the central access policy set up over here. We're going to take a look at that a little bit in a second here. So I'm going to tag my file as department equal to finance. And I know that M. Wenzer is not in Department of Finance. I can't remember where he actually belongs to. So then I'm going to try to access the share again. And now I get access denied. Yes.
Can you zoom a little bit on the screen?
If I have a zoom it. Let's see if I have them. I don't have zoom it. Okay. Yeah, sorry. Uh-oh. I can't get out of this. Windows system? Oh. Thanks. Whoosh. How do you know I just start documenting? Anyway. Sorry, I can't make it a little bit bigger. Yeah, sorry. I usually have Zoom at store installed, but as you can see, I just...
If you change the res on the screen, it might make it...
Okay. So resolution of this. I think it's the resolution of this guy is what I need to change.
No, you have to change your main resolution. I'll show you afterwards, closer to the screen.
Yes, or I can do that, yeah. Anyway, so, sorry, I'm still exploring Windows 8. I'll show you afterwards, maybe like you can take a look at them. Sorry about that. Okay, so, so now you can't access the file as MWinzer. And why is that the case? Let's take a look at the central access policy. I'm sure you're more interested into that. So inside the file document, like when I right-click it, inside the security tab, so by the way, this is a new Acro UI, as you can see. I actually have a tab that called Central Access Policy. And this will only be available if there's at least one central policy present. So here, I've also already applied this central access policy here. So as an admin, I was able to say, hey, change. Then if I have multiple, I can select the other one to change the policy on here. So that's how file server admin is able to pick the policy that they desire. And inside the rule, it says user department equals resource department. So because MWinzer wasn't in the finance and I tagged the resource to be finance, so now based on this rule, he's no longer able to access it because the equation doesn't equal to true. And then, so where does the central access policy objects and claims are stored? As I said before, this is ADAC, basically Active Directory Administrative Center. It's a new UI over here. Basically, inside a configuration naming context, there's all these containers over here. And you can go to the claim types, and then this is where we store the claim types. And one of the claim types is department. And it's an AD attribute-based department. So we have an anchor attribute over here that's selected for that. And a list of suggested values, which is the drop-down list of, say, finance or et cetera. Okay. And then we have the resource property stored over here as well. So by the way, out of box, we ship a list of default resource property. After some investigation, through all the current landscape of classifications, so we grab these informations and basically store them as the default we think will be useful for our customers. So department is one of them. And it's a single value choice of department. And it has a list of suggest a value in them, basically a user can pick. And this is what you see on the file server, like when you tag the file in the classification, that drop down. Okay, and then we look at central access rule, which is the most interesting one. Basically, the current permission inside here, we use SDDL language for that. And then the target resource is labeled here. It says only applies to files that says finance. So it limited scope to that. And then the user permission over here, the one that's most interesting is this guy, which is says allow user department equal to resource department over here. So as the drop-down, as I did before, so these are the resource properties, these are the claims. And also, it's good to call out that we only do allows inside of this. We don't do denies over here. Okay. And then there's proposed policy, which is essentially enabling the staging. Okay. So that's kind of like pop the hood a little bit to take a look at what objects there are. So the next demo, what I'm going to show is classifying them automatically. Yes.
Here's the mic.
The allow only comment, that's in general for claims based access control. It's an allow only system.
Yes, so for the so in the expression it's allow. So yeah, we do deny all by default. And then we allow specific ones. So and also there's a default ACO which says allow everyone, because remember they were at the gate. So in each gate, if I don't allow anyone, then you're going to have problem with the current existing implementation of DACOs. Because if, as Windows say, we apply them to all, like, and then all of a sudden nobody can get access to it. So by default, it's allow everyone. But it's an allow system, basically. You have to explicitly grant your rights to people.
Okay.
Okay, thanks. Okay, so we're going to take a look at the how to classify file automatically. In order to do that, I'm going to create a classification rule over here. But before I do that, I'm going to configure my schedule. So remember the continuous classification. In this demo, I want to do continuous update because you don't want to sit here wait until Sunday when it comes clicked in. So here's how I configure continuous classification, and this is in the FSRAM protocol doc. So basically, I still have to pick a date. This is kind of like a fallback feature, which is, hey, if my file server was busy for some reason, I missed the tagging in a continuous manner, I still have a fallback where the next time the schedule kicks in, it still gets tagged. And then I just simply click on this, which there's a setting, allow you to classify it. And then this is configuring the schedule. And then I'm going to create my rule called high impact. And then I'm going to say, hey, I want to scope it to important projects because I really don't care about the other folder. I only care about the files in that project. And then there's also the option up here. You see these are out of box. Classification. Basically, we decide these are categorized application data, group data, user data. Yeah, you can tag them in the folders and files. Just pre-tags that we put in there. Or you can specify your own, which I did. And then I can say content classifier. I think that's fine. I think. Can you see okay-ish? No? Do you want to spend some time zooming in a little bit? Okay, I got one thumb up.
Okay.
It's not working.
There it goes.
It's doing something. Very slowly. I'm remote accessing, so.
Oh. Maybe you have.
Oh no, I think it's a magnifier.
Yes, please, the window.
But that's for the
Really big.
Too close.
It's a little bit easier.
But the window's really small.
The window's really small, sorry.
Okay, we'll try it. How do I get out of here?
Do Windows minus.
If it will let me select it. Okay, good. Sorry. So second attempt failed.
By the way, if you're having any issue viewing this, when you come back offline, we will have the high resolution video, and you can take a look at it on your desktop.
Okay, and somehow my dialogue has gone. Okay, I think it's not responsive right now. Windows froze. All right. So this machine has 8 gig, and my Hyper-V is taking almost about 8 gig, so it's having a fit right now due to the classroom magnifier. all right, my Windows froze, and I can't really do anything out here right now. So let me try to relog on. That's pretty. Okay. All right, so let me try to remote access again. Hopefully that will fix it. Next time I'll be like, Matthias, you can't touch my laptop. Okay. All right, while it's starting, I can kind of walk you through how I'm going to tag the file if Matthias never touched my computer. So I would actually go ahead and create a classification rule, and you will see in action, thanks to Matthias, basically.
Try here BT10.
Okay.
BT10. Should have access to it.
Okay, it's coming back.
Do you need?
Okay, it's barely moving. Might be able to get it. Maybe like another process that's like working in the background that's killing it. Very slowly. I think it's ramping up. The magnify, for some reason, maybe it didn't kill it. All right, so I'm gonna do the old Windows trick and see what happens here. All right, okay, looks like it's a little bit more responsive now. Okay, so for the rest of the demo, we might be going a little bit slow over here. Hopefully, it's still going nonetheless. How do I do task manager on like a remote here? I think I wanna,
It's on the taskbar, you can right click.
It froze again, yeah.
Task in GR is the...
Try and
connect to Gear BT10. Try it.
The what?
Try and connect to Gear BT10. You should have a demo which you have to run here.
Okay. But that's not the demo I have.
It would be the same thing.
Near BT10?
T10. T10.
Does he have a password? Oh, okay.
Yeah, find recover demos.
I think it's just, you know, like, because the machine was ramping so high, so the thing just, like, couldn't handle it in my box. And I think the magnifier definitely killed it. Okay, so how, I'm going to run the task manager as well. Here.
Right click on the task bar.
Right click on the bar. Right
bar. Do you want to come over to click?
Try again. See if I can break it even further.
Yeah. It was fast before, anyway. So would that be the same scenario? Okay.
Should be the same scenario. It should be the same. Don't say. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, sorry.
I'll try not to touch them again, but sometimes these things happen.
I should have the Zoom it installed, but I just upgraded Windows.
Video is great. Next step.
Yes. Okay, while it's running, we're going to come back and take a look at the demo later. So we're going to skip ahead to what other content is there. Now, of course, it will be much more powerful if I can show you over here. But unfortunately, the Magna file killed it. Okay, so next, we're going to talk about automatic encryption of the data. So what that is very simple. It's in Windows 2008 R2, we don't have RMS on continuous base, like encryption on continuous base. So in Windows 8, we introduced the continuous base of detection of these tags, therefore enables us to continuously encrypt data. So that way, the file is more secure, because now you're no longer relying on a schedule. You're able to encrypt them continuously. Native, we also added introducing for using experience-wise. It's actually really complicated to configure the whole setting to make the RMS encryption works. So therefore, we actually developed out-of-box support, basically out-of-box rule for encryption with RMS. So again, I was going to show you a demo on the encryption. So what you would see in the demo is, I hope that will come back eventually so I can show you, but I'm going to walk through what that's going to show you. So we're going to walk through a encryption. How do you set it up? What are the parameters that's needed over there? So essentially, you define the name of the encryption rule, and then you say, hey, you know, encryption based on what kind of a classifier? It can be the tags. Basically, you can select the tags, encrypting based on that particular tags. And actually, to speak of like what rules that you, what policies you can apply to, there's actually multiple other policies that you can do other than encryption. But encryption is just one of these options. You can say based on the time, etc. Certain files gets encrypted. Certain files gets changed. So for example, based on the time, you are going to clean up this folder. So that's a one type of policy in that same setup of configuration. So one of the configurations is encryption. So based on the tag that being tagged as high impact, you're able to encrypt it using RMS template. Also there's a configuration in there that basically allow you to choose the aggregation rules. You can say overriding the tag that's already on the folder, already on the file that's coming in or being changed, regardless of whatever. Or you can say aggregate, which is kind of like a merging method for you to merge the tagging logic. So whoever gets tagged the latest wins, basically. Whatever rule that tags it later wins. Okay, so let me just take a look at this, and it's still applying. Great. All right, so I want to also talk about access deny assistant, basically the end user experience, informational worker experience on, hey, I got an access deny, now what do I do? As well as effective permission, which says, okay, this person got an access deny. Let me try to see how I can help him be able to get his access. So access deny assistant, gladly I have a screenshots over here actually. Let's see if it's big enough. So this is the new screen that we're going to be showing. And then if you look at what we had before, it basically is really not helpful. It basically says you need a permission to perform this action or access denied, contact some admin. And it has nothing that you can customize that basically says who to contact. So essentially, you'd be like, I have no idea who to contact. It's like, call the admin. Oh, great. I have his on speed dial or something. But now what we did is we actually enhanced the dialogue a little bit. We allow you to put customized message over here. Therefore, you can include a help desk link inside or whatever information that you want to include in there. So maybe you have a link over there that takes you off to some help desk information to submit a request for access, or you can say request access right here. So what that button does, once the user clicks on it, and by the way, this is all configurable, and say enable this feature, and this will be light up. So if you remember what you just saw before, the access denied dialog, it didn't have this, right? So I was going to show you how to configure this, basically allowing this to actually show up. So the request access button, once you click it, what it does, it sends an email to the target recipient. And the recipient can be the photo owner, the admin, the file server admin, or whatever address that you put in. There's one single address that you can put in for the email to go to. So then once the user clicks it, there's a default email gets sent to that recipient email list, and it includes what the user claim could include, what the user claim is, and what is preventing him to access it in kind of like a nice report format. And in addition, the help desk can actually go to the effective access permission dialog to kind of plug in the formulas to see, hey, you know, like how do I do, if the user was in Department of Finance, would he be able to access? So not only you will see in the effective permission, which I didn't include a screenshot over here, but you are able to see in the dialog that the particular thing that's preventing the user to access to it. For example, share folders, share permission, or if it's regular DACOs, it will tell you what group is, like basically the DACO is preventing you to do that, or the particular rule inside of the policy that's preventing you to access it. So it will be labeled as why you can access down to the granularity of read and write, read directory, et cetera. And then on top of the dialog, you will have the add a claim type, basically allow you to simulate if I put in finance for the user as a value, would he be able to access the file or not? And then you click on the button again, you refresh the permission, and you're able to see, oh, you know, based on the what ifs, the person now gets access or not. Okay. So again, I can't show you right now. I gotta check. Nope, still applying. Okay. But like I said, I know next time, like in the next hour, you're gonna have lunch. So I'm gonna try to get a demo working, and then maybe we can show you just a quick 15 minutes to walk through all the demo I was gonna do.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So then we want to talk about the audit access. The difference is over here. Okay, so we're almost going through all the decks. So auditing is also enhanced in Windows 8. What particularly got enhanced is, remember these expressions that we put inside of the policy? Now you can put that onto auditing as well. Now, how many people here thinks there's way too many logs inside of event logs whenever someone accesses files? Just, I guess, to show a hand of hands. Oh, only one person? Everyone else thinks it's reasonable. So, no, you wouldn't think it's reasonable. Anyway, so basically the quantity of the logs are contributing mostly to a lot of storage issues, as the ones that we talked about before, the storage issue. Also, with a large amount of data, it's almost impossible to kind of pinpoint, hey, you know, when Abby got access to, you know, file foo, when Abby not supposed to have access to. So based on the expression, you can now add an expression-based, basically an expression inside your auditing. Now it filters out the events that you don't want to see, because you know they're according to rule, you don't want to see them. You don't want it to even be generated. Therefore, it wouldn't be adding to your storage burden. So in there, you can say, I only care about user.department not equals to resource.department. So this way, the people who can't access, who shouldn't be accessing document they're not in their department special casings, I'd be able to audit them. I'd be able to log them. Everyone else, because they're doing playing by the rules, I don't really care about them. So that's what we invested in there. And also, these rules, by the way, can be assigned locally to your folder, to your local file servers. It can also be centrally distributed through group policy. So, and then in particular, oh great, now my slide deck also gone. They're taking away. Okay, come back. So basically, inside the group policy have a global setting where you can say global policy you can monitor if people get denied or people get access or monitor both, and then you can put an expression in there, and when that gets pushed out, it applies to basically all the file servers. Okay, and then with that, I want to show you some of the deep dive sessions later on in the afternoon. Basically, Ganga is going to give a MSA AZOD, which has a lot of information on authorization, informations, and a list, some list of the protocols that document that's related with it, and there's a lot of them. And then Machiko is going to give a session on authentication protocol documentation updates. Okay, and then opening up for Q&A, as promised, I'll try to get the demo working. We get off a little bit early because I wasn't able to show the demo. Maybe you can grab lunch, come back over here. If I get it working, I'll be able to show you. So I can't promise anything. You know, if Matthias touches my computer again, don't know what happens. Any questions, and we can answer them right now. And I would like to have, you know, my expert be paying attention to that. No questions?
Oh. And wait for the mic because we're recording this.
Pretty specific, but since there weren't other questions, I've been playing with the early access release, and it doesn't seem to have like the add capability policy to file. You said there are some tricks, like you won't be able to actually put caps on folders until after you configure them. Can you go? I don't have the demo, but
okay.
What's the sort of
bootstrapping
process?
It's automatically detected inside of a program, right? Inside of the ACO UI. Essentially, you're able to see, so the tab is a part of the ACO UI. So inside of the ACO UI code, they actually check to see if there's a central access policy that's being pulled down by group policy published to me. If there's at least one, I'm going to show the tab. If not, then I'm not going to show the tab. The reason being, ACO UI is visible to a lot of users, essentially everybody who uses Windows. So we may not want to burden them with the idea of a central access policy. All of a sudden, you know, your grandma saw that and you're like, what happened here? Like, what is this, right? So that's why they decided to do that design choice. Yeah.
Okay, and then I guess follow up. You didn't really talk about assigning claims to users.
Mm-hmm.
Is that just done through the AD attributes, so you don't really assign claims, you just assign normal AD attributes and those become claims?
Yeah, exactly. And then that's happened in the SAM layer. The SAM layer takes care of grabbing the attribute, stuff it into the claim, and I think Machiko is going to go a little bit more in detail on the claims in the token, how it looks like later on. No?
It's opaque to us. I can't tell you anything about it. I can point you to the AD spec, but curve, it's just a shipping container.
Yeah,
whatever's in it, we don't know.
Yeah. You've got the right idea though. The claim you define a claim type that says when doing an authentication for this type of user account, if this attribute exists, turn it into a claim, and then that goes out in the curve token. Take it.
I'm covering a little bit now about that.
Okay. So Ganga's session is gonna cover a little bit deeper into how they did that. So essentially what you said over there is correct. The idea is making it dynamic so that when the user changes, say, HR data comes in, it changes the department to, not finance, to somewhere else, then automatically the user doesn't get access anymore. So there's no, like, a one more step, I got to go assign another value into something else. And so it all comes from the AD attribute value.
I've got a question regarding about the privilege to take ownership. Claims are, is it conceived that claims can help to reduce the right for admins or for some admins to take ownership on files? Or it hasn't been envisioned yet? Like,
So I think, so let me repeat the question as I understand it. So are you saying, so your question is, the reason why the benefit of the claim is to reduce the number, like a token size potentially?
No, like the group? Okay. No. In fact, I think it's a bit problematic that admins, I mean, people with the privilege, take ownership privilege can, I mean, take the ownership in the file, and then after they can change the DACL. And I was wondering if with claims it has been envisioned to be able to limit to certain type of admin, like an admin from the finance department to be able to take ownership of a file, or any admin still can take ownership because you honor the privilege first and then after you honor the claims, or...
Okay. So I think so the question is claim envisioned to also control who gets to take ownership of the resource, right? So I don't think today we do that.
No, it's got it.
It's a good question. So let's say when you have the ownership privilege, right? What do you get based on that? You get heat control and write that to get about it, so that allows you to actually read and change the ownership of the object which you already might be the owner of. So the central access policy also has something called the owner rights ACE, and we allow it to have zero access, which means that admins will not get any access if you really want that. So yes, with central access policy, there is a way to actually disable the admin from actually getting ownership of the file, and that's actually a feature.
But remember, if you have physical access and you are the admin on the box,
if you have physical access to the box, or you are the admin of the box, there's always a way around something, right? If I take the box offline, take the hard drive out, access the hard drive through a different OS, there's things, right? It's very, very, very difficult to completely protect against the local admin. Does that make sense?
No.
On a running system, though, yes, central access policies do help to a point, but to a point.
Any other questions? Does that answer your question?
Yep.
Okay. No. If no, then I'm gonna try to get my demo working.
Thanks.
All right. Okay. So I'm back again. Hopefully this demo is working. I reduced the size of my VM. Hopefully it's no longer frozen up. And I also got the Zoom it working. So hopefully that will solve some problems over here. Okay, so let me see. So I would like to kind of start the demo from the start so that it flows a little bit better. It wouldn't take too long. And then hopefully that will work. All right, so where are we at? So I'm going to start the demo from the beginning because I wasn't able to show too much at there. And then also to kind of mention like how the central access policy works, et cetera. So the first one I want to show, again, is the manual classification. We've already seen that, so I'm going to walk through this very quickly. So the manual classification is simply I got a classification tag, and before the scenario I want to achieve is a finance user can access finance document. Just want to refresh a little bit. So I'm going to select a finance and hit apply, and then we can exam in the security tab. This is where the central access policy actually there. So why is it there? You know, you actually got it working on your machine. Because there's at least one policy that got published. So then when we look at where is it actually being stored, it's stored in AD. So we walk through what a claim is, or what a resource property is, how you're interacting with them. I'm not going to go through them again. So in the policies, I create this policy now. There's an important step over here, which this gentleman find out really quickly, that you have to publish it in the group policy. to your default domain. So once I published it through my default domain or whatever the group policy objects that you want, apply it to the file server, then it will become visible inside of the file server. So that's important to call out. Okay, so now we tag the file. I just want to go back to my client and make sure Maria is getting the right access, which she shouldn't be able to access the file now. Okay. And now she got access denied. So here's where, you know, the Magnify incident happened. Now we're going to recover from there. So at this point, we've showed the manual classification. What I'm going to do here is show you how dynamic, so the automatic classification work. Okay, so I'm going to cancel out all that. So this is the FSRM, resource file server resource manager. So the ones are labeled the global RDS property that pulled down from AD. And then there's also local property that lives on the local file server. So as you can see, they're distinguished over here. So what I'm going to do over here is I'm going to configure the schedule that runs, go ahead and tag the file first. So again, like I said before, there's a fixed schedule to catch as a failover, to catch the things that didn't get tagged because the process is too busy. And then I'm going to click on the continuous classification of the new file, which is sets on the file server. Okay, so now I configured the schedule. I'm going to go create a rule. So here's where we start got tripped off. So I'm going to create a high impact rule that basically says whenever the data include confidentiality in the file as a content, the file will be tagged to high impact automatically. So I'm going to include a scope, which is important project because I don't want the automatic classification for all the other folders because I don't care. And then in here, I have different classifiers that I can use. So I select the content classifier, which says look on the content updates. And then I'm going to select one of the resource property classification impact. And the specified value is high. So I want set impact to high. And then I'm going to say, OK, what's the condition that it will actually go ahead and set it to impact equal to high? So I want it whenever I see a string called confidential. Forgot one last tab, which is the evaluation tab. So I've done the classification, the evaluation tab. So here, I want it to reevaluate. And I want it to overwrite existing values. So that way, you can see it instead of aggregated and aggregated value. Again, this is where I talked about before. It's merging the values together or overwriting the existing value. So I choose overwriting. And I'm going to go to the this is my client box. Don't need that right now. And then I'm going to go to the folder and then do something to my documents. Actually, before I do that, I want to show you that I'm not lying. If I show you the classification, right now its impact is none. So this might take a minute for it to go around and do the continuous stamping. So I'm going to do the document word one, and I'm going to put in confidential. Hopefully I spelled it right. And then save it. So I'm now going to move this. Remember, it's only in this folder that it matters. So I'm going to move this to here. And let's check on its properties. Sometimes it takes a minute for it to stamp it. So in this case, it takes a little bit. Let's see if it works. So as you can see, the impact's now tagged high. It's simply because the content is confidential. Okay, so that's automatic classification. So I'm going to quickly run through here and show the automatic encryption, one of the scenarios we talked about before. Again, it can be done continuously. And this is creating a file management task. And then I'm going to create a task over here called the encryption, okay, based on high impact. So I want to encrypt all the data that are labeled high impact. So I'm going to add. So again, I'm going to apply to the important project. And then the action is to do RMS encryption. And this is going to take a minute. I'll come back. So the RMS encryption, this is where we actually go. The reason why it's taking a minute, it goes and retrieves the templates and the rendering, all the appropriate settings over here to figure out. So that's why it's taking a minute for it to grabbing it. So usually it takes longer than you expected. Okay, so it came back, and these are the list of the template. I already have a template that configured. I can select the template and then go to the next tab, which this is a notification. So what this does is whenever you're ready to do automatic encryption, you want to send out notification to people. This is an option that basically saying, hey, you know, date, whatever, I'm going to tag this file now. So this is one of the features that you will get a notice first and then do appropriate thing before the file gets encrypted and you can't get it back. Okay, and then reporting. I don't want any reporting on this. And the condition is where I say what happens, then encrypt. So I'm going to say impact equal to high, then encrypt the file. Okay. It's usually triggered by a update to the file that gets triggered. So I'm going to put a date again. You're familiar with this dialogue. It's fallback on Sunday if it doesn't get stamped. But I do want to have it run continuously. So I click on run continuously, and that's the rule there. So let's take a look at the file again. I'm actually going to go use the document too, and then I'm going to tag it so we see the whole automatic classify and encryption together. So I put it confidential. Now I'm going to move this to this folder. And it's going to take a minute here for it to be stamped as well as encrypted. So as you can see, it was 3 KB before, now all of a sudden it become 137 KB. So it got encrypted. And then if you don't trust me, there it is. Basically, when I open it, it tell me that it got encrypted. Okay, so that's automatic encryption. And then I want to show you the access deny remediation, or access deny assistant feature that we have. So what I'm going to do here is to try to configure this. So again, going back to my SSRMM, FSRM, and then I'm going to configure the classification, the file server resource manager options. There's a tab that says access deny assistant. So in here, I'm going to enable it. And I'm going to say I want to enable user to request for that. So here's all the options I talked about before. You know, it can include user information, which has a claims and group number. Also has device states. Recipient, I had a pre-configured mailbox in there at contoso.com. Okay, and then it can be the folder owner that received the email, or it can be admin, or it can be the recipient list. So I'm going to click them all. Okay, just for simplicity. And I'm going to log on as the client. See, we get a dialogue. So this is the old dialogue that we had. see if it works. So here is the message I talked to you about, where, you know, over here, actually, just to show that I got Zoom at work. In here, there you go. So that's the message where you actually say, oh, these are, you know, support texts. You can include a link over here that goes to a support help desk. And then there's this button called the request assistant. So I'm going to say, hey, I want to request assistant. And I want to say, I'm in finance department. I should have access to it. Okay. Okay, so successfully, I'm going to log on as the admin to see if I receive emails there. Oh. Start menu. Actually, do I remember the admin password? Nope. All right. So let me take a look at what the admin password was. Oh, there it is. Now you won't be able to access anything here with that password. Okay, so we got, what is it again? Password. What?
This is the next line.
Okay, so pass at. Sorry. Okay, pass at zero. What? Okay, so big P.
It is compulsory.
Yeah, it is the right one. Oh, okay, never mind. Yes. What? Okay, sorry. Pass at. There we go. All right. Third try. Not really third try. 30 times try. Okay, so while it's logging in, I want to show, I can actually show the effective permission over here as well. I just want to show you the email. That's why I'm logging in as an admin over there. So here I can say, again, right click on this in the security tab in my advanced thing. I have a tab called effective access. And then this is the tag I would be looking at. So I can say I want to select a user who's M. Wenzer. By the way, pretty much all the user can see this tab if they want to. So, and then I can say view effective access for Maria. And I can think, I can see that here exactly. This is the rule that's preventing her to access it, right? So pretending I got the email and I know that Maria wants, she said I'm in the finance. So I'm like, oh, let's see if she's somehow got the wrong HR data. So I can say, you know, adding a user claim. Basically adding a user claim and I want to select department equal to finance. And then I want to view effective permission again. And here I can see, oh, indeed, if she is in finance, I was actually, she's actually able to read it. So you will see the what ifs over here. So that's the effective permission. Again, I couldn't log in, but okay. So trust me, the email was sent. So that's pretty much it, all the stuff I want to demo. Hopefully that gave you an idea of how all the pieces kind of hang together in this case. Okay, thank you.
Follow-up to our conversation, the classification tab when looking at file properties, is there an enablement setting to be able to read that?
Yes, yes. So the DCs, I think everything is good to show at visual. In fact, there's an enable tag on both the claim types and the resource property. So in the UI, we streamline the process of, hey, whenever you create it, we enable it right away for you. And then when it's enabled for the claim, it's present in the token. And here, we have a list of out-of-box one, and you can basically say, oh, I want to enable this, and then they will be showing up on the file classification. So as you see over here, I have more than three than the file, like FSRM. So in FSRM, only the enabled ones will be showing up over there. Same as Akko UI. Okay? So that's all.
Thanks, Lisa.
Yeah.